Parshas Vayigash, Tavshin Ayin Aleph. Also the last day of Hanukkah, Zos Hanukkah, the eighth day. Okay. Well, this week's Parsha, as you know, has that most dramatic portion of, pretty much the most dramatic portion in the Torah, the confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef. And we've spoken about it in lots of different ways. I don't know if anyone remembers last year, where we talked about the two first malachas of Choresh and Zoreah. Choresh and Kotzer, preparing the ground and harvesting, Choresh being Yehuda and Kotzer being Yosef. Well, we're not going to talk about that again. That was an interesting, creative approach. Moshe Shapiro brings, you know, deals with that. But today we're going to talk about this this meeting from the perspective of what we have been speaking about in the last couple of weeks, which is Hoda'a, Modim, submission. The question is this: who submitted to who in this week's Parsha? Did Yehuda, true to his name, express the concept of Modeh Anachnu Lach Sheh? We acknowledge, we admit, we submit the quality of Hod, which is a form of beauty, which is concealed in the act of submission, of bowing, of acceptance, of what looks like humility, and really self-abnegation. Did Yehuda really, you know, ultimately come out here as the stronger one, or did Yosef bringing the brothers, bringing Yehuda to just where he wanted them, bringing out of them exactly what he wanted to see, and then when it was all over, admit, you know, end the game and admit who he was? Who really had the stronger hand here? And how does this interaction work? And the answer is, just to start, is they really, neither of them had the stronger hand. Each one of them was true to their midah, their character, and it's not just their personal character trait. It's two major forces, drives, and necessary spiritual achievements that are embedded into all of Klal Yisrael, and all of Klal Yisrael are meant to express both of these things. Don't forget, there's a Mashiach ben Yosef, and there's a Mashiach ben Yehuda, ben David. Not just for the nation, for every single person. In other words, Geula, personal Geula, national Geula, a reunion, you might say, of a person to themselves, the heart to the mind, heart being Yehuda, mind being Yosef. A reunion of the 10 tribes with the 2 tribes, Yehuda, Rachel's children rather, and Leah's children. A reunion of Klal Yisrael as a nation, a reunion with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This, all of these reunions are really expressed in this reunion between Yosef and Yehuda. And both of their achievements have to work together. You know, in contrast to the Greek, by the way, version of beauty, which brought to us the notion of harmony. Harmony between things that are alike. We all can see beauty when things are similar, of similar shape, of similar intensity of color, of similar design, and you put it all together, let's say, in a room, and it looks very coherent, very calming. It makes a lot of sense. You're working with, you know, you've seen rooms like this, two, you know, identical couches with two identical lamps and the identical curtains on both sides and the colors. Harmony of like things is calming. It's understandable, and superficially it's beautiful. But there's a much more sophisticated form of beauty, and that is when things that look like they have nothing in common, that they clash, blend together to form a much higher, more sophisticated, more developed form of beauty, such as in a symphony. You have all, let's say, the string instruments, and they're all of variations on a theme, but only when you add the rhythm, drums, right? Or silence in between the tones. Something totally opposite. Then do you begin to get a real sense of appreciation of beauty and of the ability of things that are unlike each other to combine. That is the Jewish form of beauty. And by the way, even intellectually, the thrill in learning, and certainly the thrill in Pilpul and Gemara, It's when you have two totally contradictory statements, like we did last week, that Esther is the end of the Nisim, just like the dawn is the end of the night. You know, and you say, that makes no sense, this is opposite. And then when it all comes together, you recognize the beauty in the harmonization of not similar things, opposite things, things that seem to contradict. And that's why in Gemara, their pilpul style is where they take totally contradictory statements from here and from there and put them together and show you that there's a deep yesod, fundamental principle, which describes both as true. Now, Yehuda and Yosef represent opposites that come together. Okay? Let's start we'll do this on many levels, but let's start firstly with the question of, you know, who had the upper hand, Yehuda or Yosef? What happened here? Okay? In order to understand this story, we're actually going to extrapolate from this what Chazal say, that this is just a mashal for what happens when a neshama goes to Shamayim, and what is the Yom Hadin. Now, we've spoken about this many years ago. I have it online as a class called A Glimpse into the Next World. I'm not going to go through the entire thing, but just for a few moments, the aspect of who submits to who. You know, who gives in to who. So we'll take it from the vantage point of a neshama facing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is how Chazal see in mashal form what happened here between the brothers, Yehuda's the representative, and Yosef. So just remember in Yehuda and the Yosef story, just to give background, okay, so we understand the mashal for the next world. You know, the brothers had so many questions. They were so confused, right? First of all, they come down to Mitzrayim and realize that as they come down to Mitzrayim, they know, because they are on the trade route, they sold Yosef to the Medanim, who eventually sold him to the Yishma'elim. That's the trade route. They were going down to Egypt. That's where people were going. Egypt was America, was the greatest empire of the day. So they had a suspicion that he was doing something in Mitzrayim, and let's see what happened with him, and where is he? Let's find him. And they come in through 10 different gates, right? On purpose, looking for Yosef. In other words, they have Yosef on their mind. They come in front of Yosef, and Chazal say he recognized them. And there's a very important pasuk here, which is going to be important for us later. It says, he recognized them, they didn't recognize him. And then later, it says, he remembers the dreams, asher cholam lahem. He remembers the dreams that he dreamed for them. My grandfather points out there, he didn't know what was with his dreams. Was he just supposed to rise to greatness, be some type of great leader, and dominate them? When he recognized that they were bowing to him because they needed to be sustained in the famine and that he would be their benefactor, he realized that his rise to greatness was only on their behalf. It wasn't that they were there to acknowledge him as their ruler. He was there to provide for them. It was a whole cognitive shift that took place in Yosef when he saw them bowing to him for food, and that his father and his sister-in-laws and nieces and nephews and the ganze mishpacha was hungry. They were hungry. He recognized that he had a role to play on their behalf. He was coming himself into an understanding of what was going on here. This story was playing itself out as, you know, time went on for all of them. But he recognizes them, and he has a plan, and he needs to find out, he needs to bring about or to acknowledge, inquire, and feel confident that they've done tshuva, because he sees that he now plays a role not just to physically sustain them, but he has a role spiritually to also feed them and to bring them to a greater degree of health, you might say, spiritually or spiritual vitality, to bring them to a greater madrega, not just to give them food. Now, his mida is shtika from his mother Rachel, not to speak, but to bring out in others greatness. His mida, as you know, is control, utter self-control. It says regarding the incident with Potiphar's wife, Vayanas, he ran away, and in the zechus of that, Haryam Ra'a Vayanas, when they were crossing the sea, it says they saw his coffin, and the sea ran away, so to speak, and split. the entire nace of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the fact that the Klal Yisrael was capable of being redeemed, was because Yosef had developed the midah in himself of havdalah, separation, of running away from total degeneration and assimilation, and that expressed itself in the incident with Potiphar's wife. Remember this idea. We're going to draw on a lot of things that we've spoken about in the past. Rav Huttner points out that each of the avos contributed a fundamental factor to the existence of Klal Yisrael. Avraham established that a person can become a Jew. You can accept the ideas and adopt them and become part of Klal Yisrael. Like he came from nowhere, he became Klal Yisrael. With Yitzchak, it was established a rule that the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael can be passed on by birth. That's called, that somebody could be Kadosh Mibeten, already holy from the womb. Not, you don't have to come to it on your own. By the way, in Christianity, this is not the case. You are not Christian just because you're born Christian. You must be baptized. And you must be accepted. And they are really a community of like-minded people, not a family by birth. We are also like-minded, clearly, but we're a family by birth. We're related. The nation is also, the nationhood is passed on, continued just by birth. That's Yitzchak. Yaakov establishes the fundamental rule, which we spoke about here a few weeks ago. Yisrael, remember Rachmanus, Yaakov and Rachmanus. Yisrael, afilu shechata. Yisrael, a Jew, even if they sin, is still considered a Jew. So that, in other words, you could be born a Jew, and you don't lose your status by sinning. There's always tshuva. Once you have a higher level of kedusha, you can't go down. It is what it is. You can, a person chasam can sin, but they don't lose their status of Klal Yisrael. Now, Yaakov, as you know, and we've mentioned this, he was the third of the avos, but Yosef has a strange relationship to Yaakov. Remember, when Yosef was born, back there in Vayetze, as soon as Yosef was born, the pasuk says, we won't go back to the pasuk says Yosef was born, and instantly Yaakov says, okay, I have to leave, time to go. And Rashi brings down there, now he knew he could go back and face Esav, because Yaakov is like an Esh of fire, Esav is straw, and Yosef is the lahava, the spark that shoots off the fire and consumes the straw. So what they're trying to say here is the straw, that's Esav. Here is Yaakov, the fire, and the fire has to destroy the straw at some point. We have to overcome it. But how does the fire get to the straw? You need some type of spark. You need some type of flame to shoot off the fire and consume the straw, and that's Yosef. What that means is, Yosef is an extension of the koach of Yaakov. He's not his own koach, but he's an extension of the koach of Yaakov, which makes him, as Rav Huttner explains, kind of like quasi one of the avos. As you see, his children became shvatim, right? And they inherited land alongside the other shvatim. Now, what's that koach? So we said Yaakov established that a Jew, even if they sin, is a Jew. However, there was one more necessary, level to achieve to ensure the survival of Klal Yisrael, and that is that the Jewish people will not assimilate completely into oblivion. It's true that if you sin, you're still a Jew, but what if you just marry a non-Jew? Then your children are non-Jewish. Well, maybe if you're a girl, a woman, so in a couple generations, inevitably, that Jewish nation will be lost. Yosef establishes the koach of resisting assimilation at all costs. That's the story with the wife of Potiphar. That establishes forever that Klal Yisrael will have the koach not to totally lose themselves in Golus. Now, this is done privately. Nobody knew what really happened. He ran away. A whole story went out. And never believe what you see in the news, and never believe what you see on YouTube, by the way, and never believe what you hear, because there's always something else going on behind the scenes. It's never as simple as it's portrayed. Every single case that I personally know where things were portrayed publicly in the news or the case was not the way it is portrayed. We don't jump to conclusions. In any case, Yosef was accused. He was the bad guy, and from that Yerida came his great Aliyah. His Aliyah comes from his koach havdalah, separation, avoidance of sin, and that he becomes the yesod. Remember my grandfather's beautiful word about the ephod? It says, remember that quickly? When he was about to sin with the wife of Asha, with Potiphar, Asha's Potiphar, says he saw Yaakov in the window. Now, very important. Sin is generally a product of a person who only knows mediocrity, the lowest level, the void, the emptiness that needs to be filled with something, and it's filled with sin, temptation, and emotional enjoyment, satisfaction. A vision of greatness at the moment of temptation is very powerful. A vision of what a person can become. If a person surrounds themselves with only mediocrity, then they have no picture of something loftier, then they'll sin. They'll sin because why not? They'll give in. They're starting from a place of emptiness. If there's a vision of greatness, of human perfection, aspirations to a higher level, and that's what a person keeps in mind, that's a fortification against sin. So he sees Yaakov, and Yaakov says to him, I'm not quoting everything in the original Chazal, but Yaakov says to him, in the future, all the Shvatim are going to have stone, their names are going to be on the ephod, and your name will be amongst them. Do you want your name erased? Now, he didn't say that to Reuven when Reuven sinned, Yehuda when Yehuda sinned. The secret here is that he says all of their names will be on the ephod. He doesn't say all of their names are going to be on the choshen. The choshen is the breastplate with all the different stones. That is not what Yaakov's talking about. Each stone was a shevet. In addition to the choshen, there was an ephod, an apron, which had two epaulets. And the two stones here were onyx, shoham, which were Yosef's stones. On the choshen, he was an onyx. A shoham. In addition to being on the choshen as one of the shvatim, his stone was on the shoulders of the Kohen Gadol, and on one side was written six shvatim, and on the other side was engraved six shvatim. And Yaakov was saying to him, your stone is going to be on the ephod. You are the yesod. You hold you are the glue that holds it all together. If you sin now, then Klal Yisrael will never have in their spiritual core the ability to resist assimilation through all of the exiles. That's what you're doing now. You need to pass this test so all of Klal Yisrael will have a foundation. Well, their future will be secured. And that's why Yosef, who's the Yesod, that's in also in one of the spheres, so this his sphere is Yesod, which also, by the way, if you read Hasidish Sfarim and they talk about Midas Yesod, it's talking about sexual purity. And not assimilating and not, ultimately falling prey to this temptation. And that's Yosef's Mida. That was his achievement. And that was what it guaranteed Klal Yisrael. But Yosef, it's all, he is the rock. He is the guarantee of the future. He is the control of the heart. Okay? And what controls his heart? His mind. His mind, which sees his greater aspirations. Now, this is Yosef. Okay? Yosef is bringing out of the brothers, specifically Yehuda, their great Mida. And Yehuda's Mida is going to be Hoda'a, submission. Right? Submission, Hod. It says about Yosef, Bechor Shar Hadar Lo. The firstborn, that's Yosef. The Shar, the ox, that's Yosef. Okay? Hadar, remember what Hadar is? The final result of Hod is called Hadar. Hadras Panim, right? That's Yosef. He brings the Hod to a point where the beauty is seen in retrospect, the Hadar. So he has to bring out Yehuda here. So look what happens. He sees the brothers, and he recognizes that he had dreams on their behalf, and he starts harassing them, and he starts telling them, who are you, where's your father, etc. They don't know what's going on. Who is he? Why is he bothering us? It says they didn't recognize him because, remember? Rashi says, he had a beard. Think for a second. He left his father's house at 17. The brothers of Yosef were bearded. 99.9% were sure they were bearded. Okay, everyone was bearded. Who bothered shaving? He looked exactly like Yaakov. Remember, the Pasuk says that Rashi brings down to Yosef, they looked the same. Ela told us Yaakov, Yosef. Rashi says they looked the same. Anyway, so my grandfather points out here, it's not that he had a beard, which of course they would have recognized him. He had a strange kind of beard. What kind of beard did he have? He was clean shaven. Remember, they took him out of the pit, they shaved him. And he had one of those little golden goatees that they stuck on somehow. And that's why I didn't recognize him, because he did not have a beard. Because he was clean shaven. He had a fake beard. Now, if you take a picture of Santa Claus, okay, or Lahavdil Elif Havdalos, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and you give him a nice haircut, shave off his beard, right? You've seen his picture a million times, and he walks in the door, no one will recognize him. Mm-hmm. Without a beard, it's a whole different story. Without the hat, the, you know, without the look. So they didn't recognize him, but he looked just like Yaakov, which is strange. Okay, then quickly he says, you know, you're all dishonest. I don't like you. You have a shady past. I don't trust any of you. You're spies. You're looking for something here. I'm throwing you all in jail. They're going, why is this happening to us? What is this going on, etc.? Then 3 days later, you know what happens? He comes, and in front of them with an interpreter, he says, you know, it's true. I don't trust them. I don't like them. I'm suspicious of them, but this is cruel. They're pleading, they're crying, their relatives are going to miss them, they're going to be worried, they're not going to have food. I should be compassionate. And he goes through this whole self, you know, like, you know, flagellation that he didn't do the right thing. He's going to change his mind, he's going to do the right thing, he's going to send them all home and keep Shimon. They hear this, and the Pasuk says that they took immediately a Musar lesson. They said, you know, we should have been like this with Yosef. He was crying, we ignored him, it's not right. This is why this is happening. They have Yosef on the mind. Then he says, okay, get Shimon out. Send, you all leave Shimon. I'm keeping this one. He picks Shimon, who threw him in the pit. Now, Shimon was very strong. It says in the Gemara, in Mashal form, says he had a hair on his chest you could break a boulder over. So he tells Menashe and Ephraim, and this is exaggeration to show he was strong, tie him up. Menashe and Ephraim tie him up. And Chazal say that the brothers look on in astonishment, saying, ooh, this is koach mi beit Abba. This is strength from our father's house. This is unusual. What is this? Who are these people? Okay. He sends Shimon home. He sends them home. He ties up Shimon. Just, you know, Shimon. Then he puts money in their sack. Some say he puts the exact amount they sold him for. Why? I don't like you. I don't like your money. You're dishonest. And they're like, how does he know? And look, isn't it a coincidence? And just the amount we sold Yosef for, the whole thing. They're totally confused. Then they go home to Yaakov. We don't understand what's going on, et cetera, et cetera. They go down with Binyamin. Yehuda swears on his life with Binyamin, and it has ramifications till the end of days, that Yehuda and Binyamin have an alliance and always protect each other. As David went to fight Goliath for Shaul, as Nachshon followed Yoshua into the ocean, Nachshon jumped into the ocean first, Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin followed, that when Yoshua was led Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, Shevet Yehuda was first. A lot of alliances between Yehuda and Binyamin, or really Yehuda and Bnei Rachel after this. In any case, a lot of examples. In any case, they come down, he says, he sits them all in age order. They're astonished. How does he know? He looks in his goblet, he pretends he knows. You know, there were four mothers. Now, Leah had children first, but after that, they were all probably having kids, you know, at the same time. Months within of each other, perhaps. How does he know how old everyone is? And then he says to Binyamin, here, you sit next to me because you don't have a mother and I don't have a mother. And then how is your father and what's up and et cetera, et cetera. They are so utterly confused. Then he sends them home. He puts the goblet in Binyamin's sack. What's the message? Maybe if you would have had a goblet which could tell you the secrets and the future, you wouldn't have done some of the things you did in your past life, right? That's why you stole my goblet. Right? He's insinuating. If you would have only known how things would play out, you would have done differently, right? He calls them back. Here comes Yehuda. Now, this is Vayigash. Yehuda's main speech, okay? What is achieved here? Is it just words of threatening words? What does Yosef succeed quietly, secretly, behind the scenes in eliciting from Yehuda? What is the central point of Yehuda's speech to Yosef? He goes on to say, he starts out and he says, please, my master, let me speak to you. Don't be upset at me. I know your greatest power. You asked us, do you have a father or brother? And we said, we have an old father, and he has a little son born to him at his old age, and his brother is gone, and he is alone, this remaining son of his mother. And then Yehuda says, Va'aviv Ahevo, and his father loves him. Now, why did they sell Yosef to begin with? Because his father loved him, because he gave him Aksonas Pasim. And by the way, Yaakov, none of this like, you know, simplistic, you know, reading of the Chumash where Yaakov favored one son and sibling rivalry. If Yaakov would make a mistake that any dumb 20-year-old parent would make, trust me, that's not what's happening. Okay, it's much more complicated. Yaakov certainly was grooming Yosef for Malchus of a certain sort. There were two. There are two kings in Klal Yisrael. There's the kings of Yosef who rule in Galus, like Esther from Rachel. The children of Rachel always rule in Galus, like Esther and Mordechai, Yeshua before when they came in, before Eretz Yisrael was conquered, and Shaul before King David takes over in Mashiach ben Yosef. And there's Malchus Yehuda. There are two kings going on in Klal Yisrael, two forces that must ultimately harmonize. Clearly, he was grooming Yosef for this. Whether they understood it or not is a different story. But they, at that time, were jealous of it. Yehuda certainly was jealous. And now he says, Va'aviv Ahevo, his father loves him. And you said to us, bring him down. I want to see him. And we said, we can't. Lo yuchal hanar lazav es aviv. He can't abandon his father. Va'azav es aviv emes. In Pasuk 23 now. If he leaves his father, he'll die. And you said, if you don't bring your young son down, don't, your young brother, don't come back. So we went back up, and we told him everything, and then it was time to come down and get more food. And we said in Pasuk 26, we can't go down unless our little brother comes with us. We can't come see him. He won't see us. And his father says to us, our father says to us, you know, two were born to me through my wife, and one is gone, and he's torn up, and I haven't seen him until today. And if you take this one too, may impanai, if you take this one away from me, and something happens to him, then v'horadetem esevasi b'ra'a she'ola, you will bring down my old age and evil to the grave. And we explained that, and when we came to our father, and we explained that if we come and without the boy, then it'll, you know, you won't see us. And he says to him here, these are his words. He says, Pasuk Lamed, look at Lamed, Va'ata, and now. Kaboi el avdecha avi. If I come to my, he calls your servant my father, if I return to my father, Vahanar einenu, and this boy is not with us, itanu, Benafsho kshura benafsho, since his soul is bound up with his soul, and he sees that we don't have the boy, he will die. And we will have caused our father to go down to in sorrow to his grave. And therefore, I've taken responsibility for the youth from my father saying, if I do not return him, v'chatasi la'avi kol hayamim, I will have sinned against my father for all time. So let me stay here instead of Binyamin and let him go back. What happened here? The Midah of Yehuda is being modeh. What ultimately is Yehuda modeh to? He submits, he accepts. Remember, Leah named him Yehuda because she wanted something. She wanted Yaakov's full love, loyalty, companionship, bond. Did she get it? No, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, all those children were named after her yearning for something that she was not achieving. Finally, with the fourth child, Yehuda, she says, Hoda'a. I give Hoda'a, remember this? I thank, I accept. There's two things. Modim anachnu lach, I submit to Hashem's decision. I accept it. Shtika, with silence, no more, not another word. I accept it. I submit to the truth of it, that it's ultimately good. And further, I give thanks. No de'lecha al. Remember, modim sheh and no de'al. That's, and I thank you that I will, this is the role you've given me to play. What does Yehuda do here? What does Yosef see? And he accepts it. Yehuda, on behalf of the brothers, is modeh. He accepts Yaakov loves this one more than us. Okay, maybe that's the way they saw it. This one is bound to Yaakov in a way that none of the other children are. I accept it. I'm not only accepted, not only am I moda that there's a special kesher between Yaakov and Rachel's children, and we didn't accept it, and we did Yosef in, which he doesn't admit, but with Binyamin, I will give my life, I will live out my life as a prisoner in Egypt, which I'm sure wasn't so pleasant, even though Yosef would have treated him well, but think about the ancient days and the prisoners, think about Rome and the he said he was willing to submit to whatever would come, because he accepts and will fight for and will die for something that hurts him, which is Yaakov's bond to Binyamin and to Bnei Rachel. total hodah, the midah of hod, submission, acceptance, acknowledging, silence in the face of it, and he will defend it because that's Yaakov's preference, and that's what he will, and he will not allow his father to suffer and to betray his promise that he will bring Binyamin back to his father. This is the midah of hodah. Interestingly enough, did Yosef bring Yehuda to his great highest madrega of hodah, submission, even greater than what happened with Tamar? Do you remember what happened when Yehuda was at his low point? He had sold Yosef. And when they saw how miserable the father was, they turned on Yehuda and they said it was your idea. And that's why he left the family and he went down physically and down spiritually. And the whole incident with Tamar happened. And then when it was about time for her to be punished as an adulteress, he accepts also Mode al ha'emes, he acknowledges the truth. He humiliates himself. He says, these signs are from me. I'm the one. He's Mode. He submits. But that was in the face of the family, in the face of people that knew him. This is in front of the entire world. Mitzrayim. Is it that Yosef's silence, Yosef's rather restraint, not punishing them, not acting on emotion, bringing them to a point where he brings out Yehuda's hodah, his ability to have the midah of hod, beauty of hod, submission, is that Yosef is the winner here, or is it something else? Is it that Yehuda, in submitting and acknowledging and accepting completely the reality, forces Yosef to reveal himself? Forces it to become clear in the world that Yosef is Malchus, that Klal Yisrael are in a state of have achieved Malchus, and really what this means in terms of the future, in terms of Olam Haba, does this mean that when Klal Yisrael, Yehudim, submit to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as it is, that brings out the ultimate revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world? Now, we always think about Yosef is Mashiach ben Yosef brings forth Mashiach ben David. But Yosef sets the ground for Mashiach ben David to come and rule in Eretz Yisrael. But Mashiach ben Yosef prepares the entire world for Klal Yisrael to take the position of sovereignty and then affecting the entire world. So it's really a circle. Here's what happens now. We get to the concept of Olam Haba. Chazal say here, when the brothers heard, when Yosef revealed himself, think about it. They were so confused. They had no clue why all this was happening to them. Did Yosef have to go through an entire discourse? Now let me explain to you how I knew how old you all were, and why I put the shekels in your sack, and why I wanted to see Binyamin, and why I kept asking you about your father, and how come my children had so much strength, and why I put Shimon in jail. He didn't have to explain anything. He had to say two words, and all their confusion in an instant, for them a horrifying instant, was clarified. All he had to say is, Ani Yosef. And everything made sense in a split second. The whole bubble burst. Not only did all their confusion instantly clarify itself, but more than that, at that same moment, which is what we call Gehenim, that is Gehenim, what they experienced right now then, is called Gehenim. The burning fires of Gehenim is busha, humiliation. Here he is. And that means they were wrong. And not only were they wrong, they were so wrong, and they brought so much suffering onto so many people, including Yosef, Yaakov, the family, Binyamin. All of Binyamin's 10 sons were named after Yosef in some way or another. He said to them, what are your children's names? And he went through the list. Each one has something to do with Yosef. More than that, it wasn't just that they were wrong. The truth was staring them in the face. There were so many clues. They were in front of the truth, and they couldn't see it. In other words, only through Hoda'ah is the Yeshua, the Emes, the R, that's already there, become revealed. It was there all the time. It was Yosef. It was always there. Only through Hoda'ah, submission, does the Emes, the reality that exists in front of us, make itself known to us. Here's what happens. Yosef just says two words, Ani Yosef. And they go through a terrible experience of not just humiliation, but the frustration. How could we have made so many mistakes? It was right here. If we would have just not been so subjective, if we were, they, what kept them blind? Simply one thing. They were so sure that they were right, and it can't be that he's a king. That's all. They were so sure that the way they saw things back then was right. That's it. And therefore, they were totally blind to the obvious, which was directly in front of them. So when a person goes through their life down here, we have so many questions about why everything is happening to us. And in the end, when a person leaves this world, they face the Shechina. They face HaKadosh Baruch Hu somehow, some way. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to only do two things. Hashem only has to say two words. Ani Hashem. That's it. And in that instant, everything makes sense. Everything makes sense. Nothing has to be explained. And that moment is either, hopefully not, it's probably a combination. The Gehenim is the terrible horror and humiliation of how could we not have seen? It was so clear. There were so many signs. We had so much information that this was true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was all around us all the time. He was right here with us the entire time. We couldn't figure it out. And we were so subjective, and then the sense of terrible frustration at the wasted time, the missed opportunities, all the years that went by when we lived in our delusion. But that's for the averus we've done, and for the bittul zman, and for the distractions. But at the same time is the other experience, which is Gan Eden or Schar, which is when the person who saw that, they always knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was right near them, they just couldn't see it. They always knew through their mitzvahs and their tefillah and their chesed and their tzedakah and their kavanah that they were speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they just couldn't see him directly. So when Hashem says, Ani Hashem, that experience is pure bliss and serenity and peace and the clarity where everything makes sense, but we kind of knew anyway that this was emes. Everything was tov and everything was emes and everything was a way to attach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We knew it, we just didn't know clearly. Hashem was hidden. We couldn't see Hashem as a human being. And here, everything we knew now kind of blossoms. That's Gan Eden. It's a combination. Even the terrible part, the Gehenna part, has a limit. That's why you only say Kaddish for 11 months. Now, what happens here is this. Just like in this case, what brought out the revelation of Yosef, who was there all the time? Submission. Hoda'a. When a human being submits, accepts their role. Now, it's not just a human being fights a battle to accept their role. Here's what happens. Truths, okay? Real truths, matters of ikar, essence, ikar, obligate a person. They assert a pressure, a moral, ethical pressure on a person. People know what they need to do. They know what's derech hayashar. We know it. It's inborn, it's embedded into us. Matters of essence, ikrim, that there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that our life has a tachlis, that we have to do mitzvahs, they obligate a person. They compel the person. The only way a person can escape that force, that kind of moral force upon them, that spiritual force of truth that is already pressing on them, is to totally distract themselves with other things. When we say submission, we mean submit to what is already pushing on us, that we already know is true. It demands from us, it obligates us, it doesn't let us do whatever we want, that's true. But we really can't escape it. The only way to escape it anyway is such total distraction of career or in simply, you know, alcohol, drinks, drugs, entertainment, parties, social, anything. Or just other things, other pressures, getting busy, making yourselves busy with a million things. But the point is, submission doesn't mean submission in one area or two. It's a total acceptance, a kabbalas ol, acceptance of a yoke. Now, Yosef is the shor, the ox, with the yoke. Okay? And Yosef brings the hod, the submission, out of everybody else. Yosef is not just, in this story, Yosef and Yehuda. Yosef is the mind, is always compared to the moach, the mind. Chacham, remember he was chacham, v'navon. The mind brings about in a person, finally, at a certain point, hopefully, an understanding of that they must submit. That's Yehuda's the lev. Yehuda represents the heart, the temptation. And what drives us in other directions. And ultimately what happens is a person submits to what they anyway really feel compelled to do. That submission brings an awareness of a Kadosh Baruch Hu who was there all the time anyway, but was clouded away by our own, the filters we set up. In the end of days, when a person ultimately submits to death, and a person knows their body is not theirs, and all the things that their body wanted, you know, and that was their body was driving them to, that was distracting them, all those kohos diminish in a person. And we talked about Eov. Suffering is a sure physical. Suffering is a surefire way. Illness, aging. It's a surefire way for a person to come to the realization that they are not their body. They are not their physical kohos. They're not necessarily, you know, their intelligence, which could be lost also. They're not any of those things. They are, they only are alive and real as much as their heart and their mind have submitted to what Hashem has already embedded in them to want to do, to need to do, to accept it, to attach themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That brings out a revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because when a person submits to the entire process of ultimately leaving this world, and takes years, it's a, you know, from the minute we are born, it starts already, right? We already have, you know, even when a person is in their prime, we know we can't hold on to anything. We can't hold on to our, to this moment. It passes. Time passes. We can't hold on to our strength. We can't hold on to our beauty. We can't hold on to our, you know, stamina. Nothing. We know it. We're always in a process of submitting to a real, a truth. That the only thing that's eternal is our attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is in our heads. And our hearts should desire it. There should be a union between the two. That's the union of Yehuda and Yosef. That submission of a person is what leads to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be revealed in all his glory, simply, and then it makes, and everything makes sense. Once a person accepts mode, it's a beauty called hod. It's concealed. It's a beauty you don't see right away. Submission doesn't look beautiful when you're in the moment of it, of giving in. In other words, self-abnegation. Giving up the fun or the moment or the excitement of the moment for long-term truth. It doesn't look like beauty in and of itself, but that beauty ultimately is revealed because that leads to HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, Ani Hashem, all of the clarity dawning on the person, and that's real beauty. That's real beauty. We said about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, David Melch says, Hadar Kavod Hodecha. Hadar, that's the final hadras panim, the shine on a person's face when they have submitted, when they do in their own life have a sense of a Kadosh Baruch Hu being in front of them, of having a sense even in this world of Hashem saying Ani Hashem and seeing everything through that, you know, prism. But the final experience of this is when a person submits to ultimately to death, comes up into the next world, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu says Ani Hashem. Now, here's the thing. The more a person prepared in this world, the more that experience becomes schar, gan eden, pleasure. Here's an example. Einstein is resurrected for a day. Everybody can buy tickets to come see him, right? 10 million people buy tickets. Everybody piles into the big, you know, auditorium. Within 10 minutes, 90% of the audience, I used to say is sleeping, now I'll say is texting, okay? And why? Because they have no clue what he's talking about. You know, they don't know the equations on the board, they don't know the language he's using, they have no clue. Why don't they have any clue? Simple. They never studied physics. Done. It was too hard, so they didn't bother. But they never studied physics. 10% of the people in the audience can understand what he's talking about. And they're all their questions, you know, the next level, where he left us, all the science that's been developed since then, and all the big questions and, you know, the secrets of the universe that still lay, you know, hidden from us. He's there with all his understandings, right? That he can reveal all that to us. A few people can appreciate it because they prepared. It's not that he's not there with all his brilliance. It's the person has no access. Now, of that 10%, a few can actually go over afterwards and ask a question and have a coherent conversation, even maybe challenge them, get some new insight. It's the same thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always right there. But if a person is not prepared, then they have no access. In this world, it's true. Kal v'chomer 1,000,000,000 times in the next world. When Hashem says, Ani Hashem, schar, reward, bliss, Rambam says, is the chachma that a person achieved. But chachma doesn't come through only being the biggest Talmud Chacham and studying and knowing Shas Baal Peh. Chachma is a product of submission. Yosef is chachma. Yehuda is the heart. Yehuda submits, accepts the fact, and therefore reveals all the chachma. That's Yosef. Chachma is an achievement. You can achieve chachma through yisurim, through suffering. You can achieve chachma through humility, through acceptance. This is how a person achieves, Rambam says, chachma. And chachma is synonymous with what we call reward, or chaye olam haba. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu being revealed, and everything making sense. But the secret is, it's not that then Hashem will reveal himself later. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always revealed. The question is, do we see it when it's right in front of us, and do we access it when it's right there? That's really the challenge of this world. Yosef, and there are people, that's why when we see Hashem is medaktik with tzaddikim kachot hasara, and tzaddikim have, Hashem is so meticulous. Other people watching don't like it. It hurts them. They don't understand that why is this happening. But the tzaddik, the righteous person, has no complaints. Because to them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is revealed, and the fact that that they accept, and this helps them come to a truth of that they are really what their mind achieves, and not necessarily the strength of their body, or the perfection of their body, or the health of their body. That hodah, that submission, that beauty, brings them to a greater and greater closeness and revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in their own lives. Talk to people who have suffered. They will tell you this. Never did they feel more loved, closer, connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, more protected than when they were ill, when they were suffering. So here, this story plays out on these levels, and I know it's late, we'll take a minute of questions. It plays out in a person's mind and heart, two opposites combining. Submission to the truth leads to a revelation of that truth. It takes place between a person and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the end of days. It takes place really when we're talking about here between the tribes, the kochos of what we call of Bnei Yisrael, ultimately what we call Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben Yehuda, the reunion of Klal Yisrael. There are many aspects to this, but I just want to end with one very important answer. I can't leave you without this. I cannot leave you without this. Moshe Shapiro points out the following. It says that they threw Yosef into a pit. And you know this pasuk, v'yikachehu, they took him, v'yashlicho oso habora, they threw him into the pit, v'abor reik ein bo mayim. The bor is reik, empty, there's no water. So, Gemara says there, Rashi brings down, that there was no water, so he says, mayim, there was none. Elama Talmud Lomar, what is it we learn? Mayim ein bo aval nechashim v'akravim yesh bo, but snakes and scorpions were in there. Now, to make a long story short, there's a Gemara that says that if a person's davening and a snake wraps himself around his leg, he should ignore it. But if a scorpion comes and attacks him, he should deal with it. He should, take care of himself. The Gra says, of course, these are mishalim. The nachash, wrapping itself around the person from the outside and squeezing, constricting the person. Nachash is from the shoresh chush, your senses. Nachash, he says, relates to desire for taiva, temptation, your heart. That, if a person is davening and they have great temptations to sin, keep davening. Because a person may stand in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu exposed for all their shortcomings, for all their human weaknesses, for all their animalistic instincts. A Kadosh Baruch Hu created us. A person may continue davening, aware that they have a lot more, they still have tavas, they still have a desire, chush, their senses are still pushing at them. But a scorpion, akrav, Akrav comes from the word, this is Vilna Gaon explains, that Akrav is a person whose chachma, whose mind, betrays HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a scorpion. No longer is trying to attach themselves to what they already know and already feel the pressure of as true. They distract themselves. They want to fall into a pit, a void, and fill it up with all kinds of temptations and distractions and other things. The Akrav, he says, is a combination of the word oker, Rav. This is not the Gra, this is someone else says this about the Gra, Oker Rav. He wants to uproot the concept of Rav, of the truth of what is of what we get the source of the word of Rabbanus. This is Chochma, an attack on Chochma. Then a person has to stop davening and deal with it. Yosef was thrown into a pit. It was full of scorpions and snakes. The last gullus is compared to the pit that is full of scorpions and snakes. The Zohar brings us down from the Medrash and Bereishis. The last gullus is compared to a pit full of scorpions and snakes. In other words, the last gullus, the challenges will be, as Yosef was thrown into a pit and on his way to gullus, the challenges will be the danger of the snake and the danger, as we said, of the scorpion. The combination, the purification of a person's heart, which comes through submission to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not to their own will, and the chokhmah of knowing what's already there, already all around us, already pushing on us, already driving us, and not letting us feel good when we ignore it. That, submitting to that, that is the hod that brings out the hadar, Yosef and Yehuda. That leads to the final gilui shechina, which should come b'mheira b'yameinu, in this world I'm talking about, the final gilui shechina of Yemos HaMashiach, of the two Mashiachim. Okay, everybody, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, anyone have questions? Yeah. Oh, Monday, question. We started at two things. We started a Monday, 9:15, Tehillim Chabura at Rivka Fuchs's house, and smaller, interactive Tehillim learning to benefit Kesher Yehudi. If anybody wants to speak to Rivka about it, she is here. And we'd like you all to join. It's a tzedakah venture, and it's mitzvah goreres mitzvah venture.
Esther.
Yeah.
You want us to meet for that? How come that the rabbi is not here?